Jenny Tapaw is with me, and Jenny is part of the Peace and Justice Network. And Jenny, can you begin to give us a sense of the purpose and the origin of that network?
Certainly, I can tell you that the Peace and Justice Network is the oldest of the communion's networks. It was begun in 1984, when it was officially blessed into being by the Anglican Consultative Council meeting of that year. And it began its work officially in 1985 with a meeting in Jerusalem. So the issues of the Middle East have been very prominent on its agenda right since that time and have continued to be so for the 25 years of its existence. But not only the Middle East, every continent, every country, every situation where there has been struggle and conflict and therefore issues affecting God's people, the Peace and Justice Network have been present.
Did it start as a response to a particular crisis, or was it just sort of brought into being because of the world need?
I think it probably was initiated as a result of particular passions shown by particular individuals, and certainly Reverend Canon Nahum Atik, who was present at that first meeting. So he certainly recalls that there was a meeting called in a hotel room by concerned individuals, leading Anglican people, to gather together and to begin to strategize best ways of addressing critical issues of peace and justice. And they brought that concern clearly to the Anglican Consultative Council, where it was taken seriously. And so began the emergence of the idea of networks of support across issues of common concern and across the entire communion.
Now, would the mandate of peace and justice, would it be fair to say you can't have one without the other?
Absolutely, and what's interesting for me is as I was researching its origins, I realised that the concept of peacemaking was the one first used. Justice did not appear until, I guess, about two meetings in. So the idea of peacemaking, and maybe that was just a measure of the idealism of those early days, that we would be as peacemakers as God calls us to be. And I can see the evolution of a lot of the issues from their beginnings. For example, we were not linking the issues of sustainable development and poverty to the issues of war and conflict as intentionally as maybe we ought to have right from the beginning. That sort of started around about the middle 1980s and so on. So you do, you evolve, I think, your ideas and certainly your understanding of the interconnectedness of all of these issues.
Yeah. Does the network hold face-to-face meetings? Do you use email as a means of communication? How do you connect with one another?
We have been one of the networks particularly blessed with resourcing to enable us to meet face-to-face at least every 2 years. And we meet across the communion. And generally we try to meet in response to particular pleas from people in situations of conflict and struggle to bring together, to bring the network, so folk from across the communion, into that situation in an act of solidarity and of Christian witness to the particular struggles. And then we sit together to work, to consider strategies, common support projects and so on that we can bring to bear into the particular situation and of course, to act as advocates in response to that. But we also bring into those situations, clearly, as we're across the communion, our own particular struggles as well. So the conversation is particular to the context, but not specific. We are concerned about all of the issues in God's world. So we're sharing the pain, if you like, but also sharing our common commitment to resolving to the largest extent that we can some of those struggles.
Obviously, trying to deal with those kinds of questions would take you well beyond the Anglican world. Mm. Is there an interfaith dimension to peace and justice?
Again, we're realizing, and I think more particularly in the most recent circumstances, cases like Sudan, Darfur, that without a deep profound understanding of the interreligious implications of well, origins and the implications for resolution, we can't actually proceed. So, yes, that's certainly interfaith and interreligious understandings. We're starting to realise there needs to be a lot more education in this respect.
Right. Are there a lot of members of the Peace and Justice Network?
We are very proud of the fact that of the 38 provinces, we regularly have an attendance of somewhere between 75% to 85% of the provinces send representatives. Now, that's not to suggest that there are, 15% to 20% of the communion that think we're not. It's a matter of resourcing. It's a matter of timing. It's a matter of, I guess, of interest in the work that we do. So we do. We are very proud of the fact that we do have a significant buy-in from the communion in the work of the network, and always have had.
An individual Anglican member, or perhaps a parish, who finds themselves growing more and more interested in peace and justice, is there a way for them to be working with the network or reading about the information and that sort of thing?
The reports of the network and are incredibly well sought after. I remember being at ACC in Hong Kong, and because our reports have become more and more attractive in their presentation, there was an unseemly grab for the reports from the bags of the members who hadn't quite checked in. No, we do publish comprehensive reports, always have done. All of this material is available currently on the website, or pointers towards it. And we have entrusted all of our members with the responsibility of taking back to the largest extent that they possibly can all of the information, and again, to be advocates towards the resources that we circulate regularly for the people in their own provinces, in their own parishes, in their own churches. So, yes, our work pops up all over the place, actually.
Describing some of the work, you talked about traveling to places of conflict and of difficulty.
Mm.
That must put a certain element of risk
into
the work that you're doing. Are there some people who have emerged through the Peace and Justice Network that kind of the unsung heroes and that sort of thing in terms of the work that you're doing?
I think one particular example that I can think of was in 1998. Just a small group of representatives of the network, not the whole network, were invited to Sri Lanka. And while Sri Lanka in 2009 is, of course, experiencing renewed brutalities and unconscionable acts of violence, in 98 it was certainly right in the midst of extreme civil war at that stage. So five of us travelled to Sri Lanka. And we were hosted by the church in Sri Lanka, but particularly by two young Anglican priests, one of whom is Reverend Prince Devananden, courageous, extremely courageous young men, who took us up into Jaffna, which at that stage was a no-go zone. It was not open to the public, and we flew on a non-commercial aircraft. So at that point, when we left Colombo, we knew that we were not, there was no protection, there was no civil protection for us, for those, myself, Naeem Atik, and Jim Otley at the time, who was the Anglican observer. So we went into Jaffna, and we were exposed at first hand, I guess, to the horror that the world was not being able to see about the forced exodus at that stage of Tamils out of Jaffna, and the bombing of all of the legal and educational infrastructure and health infrastructure, hospitals, libraries, and so on. And just the horror that they're... I guess as Prince accompanied us and exposed us to all of this, a recurring conversation that he was having with me was to do with his desire to further his theological education. As a result of conversations when I returned home, he was able to come to New Zealand and actually complete a master's degree and bring his family, more importantly, into a situation of safety. But for only 2 years, at the end of that time, his bishop insisted that he return into the conflict zone. He did do, and I felt incredibly guilty at exposing his children and his wife to what was almost a tantalizingly false sense of security. So we worked, after he went back, to bring him back into to New Zealand. Today he is working for the Methodist Church in New Zealand as a superintendent. He's got a very senior position. But what he's doing in the exile, if you like, is being one of the most extraordinary advocates for the Tamil struggle in Sri Lanka imaginable. Not only that struggle, but when the tsunami affected, he was the New Zealand organiser for a phenomenal amount of aid that went into Sri Lanka. So, you know, as a result of the exposure, you touch the lives of people and they continue to honour their commitment to God's peace with justice in the most surprising of circumstances. But he's just one example.
Are you discouraged or are you hopeful for peace and justice?
I'm always hopeful for peace and justice. That's the call, it's the gospel call that we are each entrusted with. So our responsibility is to never resile from that. So I must always be hopeful.
Thank you.
Thank you.